Okay. Good morning. Thank you. We will call this meeting to order and begin with a roll call, please.
Commissioner Escalante.
Here.
Commissioner Hart.
Here.
Commissioner Jackson.
Here.
Commissioner Kelly. Commissioner Lee.
Here.
Commissioner Lopez.
Presente.
Commissioner Loewenberg. Here. Commissioner Nodoff.
Here.
Commissioner Preciado.
Here.
Commissioner Williams.
Yes.
Commissioner Wilson.
Yes, here.
And Chair Harmon.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great. Thank you very much. I will turn to our chief counsel to report out on yesterday's closed session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. At the end of the day yesterday, the commission met in closed session. It received litigation information and advice on Friends of Oceana Dunes versus California Department of Parks and Recreation et al., and on Shear versus California Coastal Commission. And that concludes my report.
Great, thank you very much. Okay, Chris, I'll throw it back to you for our virtual meeting procedures, please.
Good morning. This Coastal Commission meeting is occurring both in person and through Zoom. This meeting is also being webcast and can be viewed online at cal-span.org. If you have internet access and wish to watch or listen to the meeting only and not speak on an item, we recommend you use the CalSpan website. Those who wish to address the commission today can do so in person, through the Zoom platform, or by phone. The speaker request forms may be found on the commission's webpage. Paper forms and a scannable QR code for paperless submittal are available on the commission staff table just outside the meeting room. For those on Zoom, we have posted virtual hearing procedures on the commission's agenda webpage, which is a guide on providing comments via Zoom or by phone. Members of the public speaking during general public comment may be given up to 2 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. Requests to speak during the general public comment period will not be accepted after 9 a.m. on each day of the meeting. In order to provide the opportunity for the broadest range of public participation, you may speak on a specific topic one time only each month. Those speaking on an agenda item that is not general public comment are typically allowed 2 to 3 minutes to speak at the discretion of the chair. We will accept a request to speak on a regular agenda item up until the chair opens the hearing on that particular item. If you have internet access, please go to the commission's webpage and click on the link to fill out a speaker request. If you do not have internet access or prefer to testify by phone, please call the commission staff at 562-477-9089. Again, that number is 562-477-9089. Staff will provide you with a telephone call-in number and instructions for how to participate and provide testimony by phone. We will manage speakers coming in and out of the meeting through a meeting organizer. When it is your time to address the commission, the organizer will invite you to turn on your video and microphone or provide instructions on how to unmute the phone. Madam Chair, that concludes the virtual hearing procedures.
Great, thank you very much. Okay, so with that, we will go to agenda changes, please.
Thank you, Chair Harmon. We have three changes to today's agenda, all of which are noted on the agenda changes memo posted to the online agenda. First, item 10A has been moved to consent for a City of Fort Bragg LCP amendment. Next, item 10B has been moved to consent, also for a City of Fort Bragg LCP amendment. And finally, item 14A has been moved to consent for a Santa Cruz County LCP amendment. I'd also note that there will be no enforcement report today, and that's item 8 on the agenda. That concludes the changes to today's agenda. So that brings us to item 4, general public comment. And with that, I'll turn the mic back over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Teufel. Okay, Galen, to you.
For members of the public, I will be announcing the names of the upcoming speakers and invite you to speak when it is your turn. Each speaker will be allowed 2 minutes during general public comment at the discretion of the chair. In order to allow for live video testimony on Zoom, we will be bringing you in as panelists. As we bring you in, your Zoom will reload. This may take a moment. To speed up this process, we will bring in several people in at a time, but please remain muted and keep your video off until we ask you to speak. After your time is up, you will be moved back to the attendee mode. For members of the public present in the room, I will call your names in order that they appear on our sign-up list. When you hear your name, please line up behind the podium and introduce yourself when you approach to speak. There is a raise hand function that will help us find you in the attendee list. If you are using a phone for audio, you can raise your hand by dialing *9. If you are participating by Zoom, you should see a button on your Zoom screen. If you have signed up to speak for this item and are able to do so, please raise your hand now. When it is your time to speak, we will invite you to unmute and turn on your camera. You can unmute yourself on a phone by dialing *6. So looks like we have a total of 11 people, or pardon me, 11 total to speak, starting off in person with Eric Andrew Neighbors and Adam Leverenz.
If you could just turn on the mic, please, sir. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Eric Neighbors. I'm here to discuss the Lorenzo butterfly effect of municipal finance. Currently, the state is playing a game of leakage. We are flushing our capital down the toilet by paying interest to private lenders while ignoring the massive revenue streams we already own. We allow industrial oil surges to be labeled as natural because our financial architecture is too weak to fund a response. This isn't an environmental failure. It's a mechanical failure of the ledger. I am here to install the National Coastal Infrastructure Self-Banking Act. We anchor a $4 billion principle to grow the money, not the debt. At a 20% yield, which most people get for investing in infrastructure, we will receive back $800 million annually. We split that immediately, $400 million back to the principal fund, and $400 million accessible for the triad. By year six, this engine doubles. We hit a state of $1.8 billion in revenue, split down the middle, $900 million to infrastructure anchor and $900 to the triad. The money scales with the problem until the problem is dead. The triad funds commission autonomy, all of you guys that obviously don't have enough money to access, air for pristine air reforestation and at-will automatic mechanical cleanup of this oil seepage. But more importantly, I am prepared to give a consultant briefing on how AI's material engineering is currently dismantling the oil industry. We are moving towards 1,000x advancements in materials engineering, and in 3 years, that will render petroleum a stranded asset. We are out-engineering the old guard. To manage this transition, we are establishing the Sovereign Oversight Commission. Stop being foresighted and start being farsighted. The growth is exponential. By year six, we have $900 million for the triad and $900 million to keep funding growing forever. We can re-sand our beaches, reestablish the globe starting right here. I'm Eric Neighbors, and I'm here to lead the oversight. Let's stop the leakage and start the flow. Thank you. I also had a big problem trying.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
You. Next up, we have Adam Leverenz in person, followed by Benita Ernst and Suthi Kothon on Zoom.
Adam Leverenz, good morning, commissioners and staff. I had a slide I could hope to be called up. I love these small venues. You're like real people. I missed the big screen behind you, but those of you I've interacted with, it's always been pleasant. But I mean, some of these places, I need binoculars to see where you are. So, my fault. It's always the man's fault. yesterday, you saw a video encouraging the city of Newport Beach to adopt benchmark rates for recreational leases of state lands. This is moorings and boat berthings, as most of you know after 2 years. This flyer here, if in October of 2024, the executive officer of state lands stood before all of us in San Diego and talked about appalling rate discrepancies in Newport Beach and what she described as, quote, real deficit inequity going on here, close quote. State lands, they're experts at setting rates for lease of state lands. They proclaim this in each staff report. They set rates. If there's large concentrations of usage in geographic areas, they do an analysis about every 5 years and set what they call a benchmark rate. They've set a benchmark rate, Category 1, for Southern California, including Orange County, down to San Diego. If the city were to adopt that rate, there's no more local corruption of appraisal processes. There's no more political motivations, which State Lands has noted in a couple of reports that things appear to be politically motivated. There's 4 council seats up for election this year. State Lands had told them we wanted to see progress in 3 or 6 months. Well, now it's going to be until after the election. Go figure. But anyway, we're trying to spread the word. The city will not want to do this because it allows people like me to pay the same rate as other people. And that seems equitable. A person with a $29 million home on the harbor paying a fraction of what I pay out in the middle of the harbor doesn't make sense. So I'm just trying to spread the word on this, and I continually hear from staff here and at State Lands that they're working closely with the city. Stakeholders need to be engaged. There's going to be need to be some pressure to get equity and fairness. And thank you all again.
Thank you. Next up on Zoom, we have Benita Ernst, followed by Susie Cawthon, and then Karen Baker. Benita Ernst, please go ahead.
Good morning, commissioners and staff. Today I'm speaking about the Oceano Airport, L-52. I have a graphic, yep. CDP request by Slo County Airports is expected to go before you in the near future. Oceano is a community divided, literally, by a land-heavy, low-utility, fixed-wing airport. I'm here today to propose a vision of modernization over maintenance. The Oceano Airport is geographically redundant. Within approximately 15 miles, we have two full-service regional airports in San Luis Obispo and Santa Maria. Just beyond are airports in Paso Robles, Lompoc, San Ynez, and New Cuyama. Maintaining a seventh fixed-wing runway in a sensitive coastal zone is no longer a strategic necessity. It is a luxury the disadvantaged community of Oceano should not be forced to subsidize with its coastal land. Next slide. The proposal is simple. By transitioning L-52 into a dedicated heliport, vertiport, they would preserve the modern and critical aeronautical functions. This keeps the national system intact while liberating more than 60 acres of prime coastal land. Slide, please. Okay. And you can even go to the next one. This is a matter of coastal access and environmental justice. The current airport footprint and fencing blocks residents from easy and safe beach access and prevents the restoration of our valuable wetlands. Under the Coastal Act, you are tasked with maximizing public access and protecting sensitive habitats. This underutilized, costly fixed-wing runway mainly serves a small number of hobbyists. This is not asking to close Oceano Airport. This is asking to evolve it. And you, the commission, are our bulwark to Oceano being used by wealthier interests. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next up via Zoom, we have Susie Cawthon, followed by Karen Baker, and then Noelle Gould. Susie Cawthon, please go ahead. What speaker do you have in range of the microphone?
Yeah, this is Anthony from AGP Video. If you have any speaker, please mute that speaker so we can not have any feedback or echo or delay.
Okay, is that currently okay?
That's much better. Thank you. Go ahead. Unmute. Yes, that's much better. Thank you.
Okay. My name is Susie Cawthon. I am currently serving on the Parks Commission for the County of Santa Barbara. I have formerly served on the Human Services Commission for 8 years. And I know that with your responsibilities come are very grave and that you accept these duties with expertise and with devotion, and that is why I am absolutely flummoxed that this commission allowed building to proceed on the incredibly sensitive parcel, which is at the entrance to the estuary for the Carpinteria salt marsh. I can only assume that you did not do proper due diligence and visit this strip of land, which you setting foot upon it is obviously unbuildable. It was be a horrible disservice to the beautiful salt marsh and the environmental gem that it is for Carpinteria. As you're entrusted with coastal access and environmental protection, this was a very huge mistake. And I know you have recently needed to course correct on several other decisions, and I'm looking forward to the opportunity for you to course correct on this one. I would please implore you, you need to come see this strip of land. You need to visit this environmentally sensitive space. It is not a buildable parcel. It should be purchased by a land trust or something because it needs to preserve this very delicate, sensitive area for all of the Carpinteria Valley. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Cawthon. Next up, we have Karen Baker, followed by Noelle Gould, and then Samantha McDonald. Karen Baker, please go ahead. Ms. Baker, please go ahead, if you can hear me.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Okay, great. Good morning, commissioners. My name is Karen Baker. I watched on Tuesday the public comments from the Better Neighbors LA about hosted-only short-term rentals, and I was concerned enough to speak today. Better Neighbors LA should not be treated as a neutral neighborhood group. It's a hotel union connected advocacy organization, and its hosted-only proposal would directly benefit hotels by eliminating most whole home short-term rentals. But this issue should be looked at through the eyes of families trying to visit the coast. A hosted-only rule may sound reasonable, but it does not work for most families. Families need privacy, kitchen, laundry, and a space to be together under one roof. I cannot imagine most parents choosing a vacation rental where the owner is required to sleep down the hall from their children. This is not a realistic family lodging model. Whole home rentals serve a completely different need. They serve families, grandparents visiting their children and grandchildren, multi-generational travelers, wedding guests, and people who cannot reasonably fit into one hotel room. Families should not be forced into only two choices, a hotel room or a bedroom inside a stranger's house. Hosted only is being presented as a compromise, but for family coastal lodging, it functions as a de facto ban on whole home coastal access. I support reasonable short-term rental rules such as permits, taxes, noise standards, occupancy limits, enforcement, and accountability. But please do not eliminate an entire category of family-friendly coastal lodging under the label of hosted only. Please protect whole home short-term rentals and preserve real coastal access for families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Baker. Next up, we have Noelle Gould, followed by Samantha McDonald, and then Steve Starkey. Noelle Gould, please go ahead.
Should I introduce myself before the timer starts?
Yeah, please go ahead, Ms. Gould.
Yep, I'm Noelle Gould, speaking as an individual, not as a member of the Coastal San Pedro Neighborhood Council. And good morning, commissioners. I'm asking you to confront a basic port master plan problem that staff has avoided. The certified port master plan's visitor-serving commercial category lists restaurants, visitor-serving retail, harbor tours, sport fishing, museums, community or conference centers, and exhibit space. It does not describe or contemplate a 6,200-seat regional concert venue larger than the Greek Theater. Planning Area 1 is described as emphasizing public waterfront access through promenade, parks, museums, academic uses, and visitor-serving commercial uses. That is fundamentally different from a high-intensity, ticketed regional entertainment venue designed to attract major touring acts and thousands of attendees per event. The 2009 approval contemplated a small community outdoor amphitheater, while the current project changes that into a 6,200-seat flat concert venue. That is not a minor refinement. It's a 12-fold increase in capacity and a fundamental change in operational intensity. The SEIR itself admits that the smaller previously approved alternative would reduce impacts to noise, transportation, public services, and cultural resources. A 500-seat community amphitheater and a 6,200-seat regional concert venue are not equivalent under the Port Master Plan, CEQA, or common sense. Simply calling this an amphitheater does not transform a 6,200-seat regional concert venue into the same use or impact as a 500-seat community amphitheater. This is a fundamental change in scale, intensity, regional draw, impacts, land use character. And that is precisely why a port master plan amendment should have been required. This project materially exceeds what was originally contemplated and approved. Allowing a project of this magnitude to proceed without a port master plan amendment effectively rewrites the certified plan through staff interpretation rather than through the public process required under the Coastal Act. I ask the Commission to please require a port master plan amendment before this project proceeds any further. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gould. Next up, we have Samantha McDonald, followed by Steve Starkey. Samantha McDonald, please go ahead.
Hi, my name is Samantha McDonald from Newport Beach. I believe I have a slide that I submitted this morning. Awesome. Thank you. As you guys know, I often show up to these meetings with a serious tone talking about the moorings in Newport, but today I just kind of wanted to spark a bit of joy. My partner Michael and I are on vacation currently in the Channel Islands at Santa Barbara Island in the National Parks. And even though we've sailed 8,000 nautical miles together across Baja, French Polynesia, and the Atlantic Ocean, we've never actually been to the islands in our own backyard, so it's really special. All the photos on the screen were taken in the past 48 hours. We had a stowaway hermit warbler join us for a sail. We had dolphins play in our bow. We had a sea lion pup yesterday come to play for 10 minutes, jumping around our boat. Very curious who we are. I wish I could show you all the photos that we have, but you know, Santa Barbara Island is remote, and due to a storm, the dock was wiped out. So really, if you have your own boat, that's the only way to visit. You can't get here by ferry. So it really is special to be able to hike around, to see everything that's on the island, and see everything beautiful underwater. And yesterday, we had the whole island to ourselves. We did not see a single person on the entire island. And it's so magical to be here, especially just a few miles next to one of the most populated places in America, and be able to escape. It really is incredible to have access to some of the most beautiful underwater ecosystems from our boat. And this is what we're fighting for. You know, anyone in California should have affordable access to this opportunity and not the wealthy. And we're seeing that slip away so quickly in Newport Beach. And this is what losing affordable access means, is losing the ability to do this and losing the ability to have this joy and to live on a boat and to experience these things and be part of the water. So I really hope that you take this into consideration of what we're really fighting for. And it's not because we want to be cheaper, it's because we want access in a way that we just can't otherwise. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McDonald. Next up, we have Steve Starkey. Mr. Starkey, please go ahead.
Can you see me and hear me?
Yes, we can. Please go ahead.
Well, that was a nice positive note from Samantha, but good morning to the commission. As you know, my name is Steve Starkey. I'm speaking regarding the project that's already been spoken of this morning, known to you as 501 Sandpoint Road in Carpinteria, the new construction project that's under consideration by the commission. My focus today is on the setback requirement from the Carpinteria salt marsh for new construction that appears to have been waived by the commission to the owners of 501 Sandpoint Road. The project is on a piece of land which is known to be a sensitive habitat, as was described to you earlier today. And commonly, the setback requirement for new construction on Sandpoint Road has been 100 feet from the Carpinteria salt marsh. In this case, in the case of 501 Sandpoint Road, the footage appears to be closer to 25 feet. And I live down the street at 775 Sandpoint Road. I'm considering construction on my own. And I wish to know if you're establishing a new precedent regarding setbacks on Sandpoint Road adjacent to the salt marsh. And by granting permission to this one owner, if that's the case, after proper review by the commission, I'm hoping you can provide clarification on the setback issue, which the homeowners on Sandpoint Road can use going forward on their own construction projects. That was all. So thank you very much for your consideration this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Starkey. We have three folks on Zoom that we're not able to find, so if you can hear me, please raise your hand and we'll be able to get you to speak. We have Kent Allen, Robin Redesil, and Michael Spano. Kent Allen, Robin Redesil, or Michael Spano, if you could please raise your hand. We've allowed you to speak. It's under Dean Pencheff. Please state your name and if you can go ahead and speak.
Hi, yes, it's Robin Rudisil. I'm using another Zoom account, sorry.
It's okay. Thank you. Please go ahead.
All righty. Well, good morning. I'm a member of the Coastal San Pedro Neighborhood Council Board, but I'm speaking today as an individual regarding the Walker's Cafe project at 700 Paseo Del Mar here in San Pedro. Walker's Cafe is one of the last authentic historic coastal gathering places on the San Pedro Bluffs and was designated by the City of Los Angeles as an official historic cultural monument. It's across from Point Furman Park, the lighthouse in Sunken City, and is a lower-cost visitor-serving coastal resource. The city-approved project adds a massive residential structure across nearly the entire lot with no front or backyard. There's only a narrow space between the back of the cafe and the residential structure where they plan to put a patio with outdoor dining in an area that should be reserved for emergency access, operations, loading, and trash handling. The goal seems to be to squeeze the most massive structure possible onto this lot along with this historic coastal resource. The project also raises Coastal Act public access concerns because parking needs due to the cafe's intensified use would rely almost entirely on existing public coastal parking serving Point Furman Park and the other surrounding visitor destinations. Point Furman is one of the most historic and visually distinctive coastal neighborhoods in Los Angeles. A much smaller residential structure within the footprint of the existing garage area could allow both housing and the historic cafe to coexist successfully while preserving operational and emergency access, visitor-serving use, coastal neighborhood character, and the long-term viability of the cafe itself. When this project comes before you, please carefully scrutinize whether it truly protects the Walker's Cafe, a historic visitor-serving coastal resource, or merely leaves it behind as an accessory to overdevelopment. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Redesil. Looks like Michael Spano is on the boat with Samantha. So, Mr. Spano, please go ahead.
Good morning, Honorable Chair Harmon, commissioners and staff. I'm Michael Spano, and I'm the proud owner of my 37-foot sailboat and a mooring permittee of Newport Beach. I just want to remind you all that I can only have this maritime experience because of an affordable place to park my sailboat. Owning my boat has been an incredible experience. I've addressed this commission from many different parts along the West Coast, including Mexico. Today, I address you all from the calm side of Santa Barbara Island. But this journey hasn't been easy. Maintaining my boat has been a labor of love for nearly 5 years, and I'm still undergoing major improvements to my boat. Why am I telling you this? It's simple. I couldn't afford to improve and maintain my sailboat, let alone enjoy her, if Newport Beach were to alter their mooring program. Can we agree that the wealthy may have their playgrounds, but we should also reserve space for common people to dream as well? This is my dream, and like the many Californians that came before me that have shared and written books about it, it would be such a shame if this dream were to fade away and become a memory we tell our grandchildren about. And that's really all I have to say for you all. Thank you for your time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. All speakers have been accounted for. Madam Chair.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Forgot my job here. All right. Appreciate the public. Thank you for sharing your testimony. And I'll return to the commission for any comments, questions. Okay. Commissioner Wilson.
Because this is the time to do so, I just want to thank the community of San Pedro for having us. And what a wonderful space this has been, and what a wonderful town. Because I know it's part of a bigger city, but I have to tell you, it's got a real good town vibe, and I just want to say I've really enjoyed it. So, and I think everyone did. So thank you for having us.
Yes, it's been great. Okay. Commissioner Lopez.
Yeah, I think this is the appropriate time. I just wanted to share, I recently had the opportunity to visit Maui, and in that used an amazing self-guided tour guide called Shaka Guide. And I reached out to the owner saying, we need this in California because they only do one stretch, which is San Luis Obispo to SLO. And they emailed this morning to let me know that in the next few weeks, they'll be releasing an entire California coast GPS guide split into four parts. So just wanted to share, I've got no investment in that company, nothing else, but it was an amazing experience. And I was told that there is a heavy emphasis on conservation and the history of the attempts to protect the California coast in that guide. So I look forward to experiencing that and just wanted to put that on everybody's radar, given it is our 50th year. Thank you.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, so we will continue on, and we are at the items pulled from the regular calendar to consent, I believe.
That's correct, Madam Chair. That's item 6, and it provides for applications to be moved from the regular calendar to the consent calendar. There are 3 items that we're recommending to be moved to consent, and those are item 10A for a City of Fort Bragg LCP amendment to update ADU provisions in the LCP, item 10B, another City of Fort Bragg LCP amendment regarding tiny homes, and item 14A for a Santa Cruz County LCP amendment that addresses housing element redesignations and rezones. With regard to item 10A, the Fort Bragg amendment for ADUs, we received one letter from the public and made some minor clarifications within an addendum posted to today's agenda. In terms of comments received on item 14A, which is for a proposed Santa Cruz County LCP amendment to redesignate and rezone 3 sites in the county's coastal zone to facilitate housing development, correspondence was received from the county, the Sierra Club, the nonprofit affordable housing developer proposing a project at the 7th and Brommer site, and multiple community members, all in support of the staff recommendation. Correspondence in opposition was received from the Santa Cruz Port District and one community member, preferring that the commission simply deny the amendment for all the reasons related to the 7th and Brommer site. The Port District's concerns are that the proposed rezoning would impede the overall master planning process envisioned by the LCP for the whole of the roughly 10-acre LCP-designated coastal priority site, and would also preclude the Port District's preferred visitor-serving accommodation project there. The Port District notes that there are no longer negotiations with the county, which staff notes that the staff report is not up to date at this point, and that it believes that the envisioned housing project will severely impact any potential visitor serving and public access related development at the site. While staff agrees that it would be preferable if the whole of the site was master planned together, staff also believes that the compromise developed in tandem with the county to designate a portion of it to accommodate housing, where a 100% affordable housing project is currently in the works, appropriately facilitates housing while also leaving a large enough area that the master planning envisioned can still accomplish LCP priority use goals. So we respectfully disagree with the port that respects in that respect and continue to believe other types of visitor serving and access related development are possible at the site. As to the other letter in opposition, that letter suggests that the 7th and Brommer site should be used solely for harbor related activities rather than a mix of uses. But we note that the LCP dictates a mix of visitor serving, residential, parks, and related open space uses. So the outcome suggested by the commenter would not meet LCP tests. Overall, staff continues to believe that the suggested modifications related to the 7th and Brommer site are necessary to balance and preserve the various LCP and housing related priorities for the site. And the county is in agreement with the recommendation. Thus, we continue to recommend that the commission approve the amendment if modified as suggested on the consent calendar. I'd also note that the district director, Dan Carl, and his staff are online and available if there are any questions on this issue or additional details needed on this item. In regard to the other matters to be moved to the consent calendar today, those applicants are also in agreement with the staff recommendations and were not aware of any opposition. Thus, staff recommends that the commission vote and approve this item. That concludes my comments, Madam Chair.
Great. Excuse me. Great. Thank you, Mr. Teufel. Are there any ex partes? Any public comments?
Yes, we have a few public commenters. First, I'll start with item 10B. We have Adam Leverins here in person. And we're bringing up your presentation.
Good morning again, Adam Leverins. I think you've detected from me that housing is a big concern of mine, as well as some of the other things I'm concerned about. I've had an interest in what are now called tiny homes since before they were tiny homes, cabins, converted sheds, RVs, boats, everything. The image that I hope you can all see, I found these, you know, based upon staff materials, 500 square feet or less. The first four of these images, the trouble I have is with the definition of tiny homes that's in this agenda item, and it says small towable residential structure, and then it defines that they'll be licensed by the Department of Motor Vehicles. These first four things are tiny homes, but you can't really move them. They're not towable. I mean, you can hire a wide load truck, and I've checked in various states, all kinds of permitting, special requirements, certain hours of day. This adds cost. To make them towable adds cost. The last two images, they could be trailered. The next to the bottom one, if you were to pull off the porch, and the bottom one is more typical of what would be built on a travel frame. The staff report says you guys have until last day for commission action, April of 2027. Really look at this definition. A tiny home doesn't need to be a DMV registered something. These things can be site built. There's all kinds of options. And by going with this definition, you're restricting what can be used for accessory dwellings, as well as driving up the cost by making it have to be towable so that somebody could build something in their backyard that could house somebody else without having to be licensed by the Department of Motor Vehicles and be able to be towed is going to really restrict the number of these that get built. And given the time until you're required for your final action, I hope that definition can be changed. Thank you.
Thank you. For item 14A, we had two people from the County of Santa Cruz signed up to speak, Mark Connolly and Kimberly Finney, but we aren't able to find them on Zoom. If either of them are on Zoom, please raise your hand. And then we also had Okay, I see one hand raised under the name GSD662. You should be able to unmute yourself.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, good afternoon, Commission. My name is Kimberly Finley, and I am the county's lead on the surplus sale of the 7th and Bromer property. The property consists of three contiguous parcels totaling 8.3 acres. It's owned by the Redevelopment Successor Agency and subject to oversight from multiple state agencies, including the Department of Finance, HDB, and the Surplus Lands Act, and the Coastal Commission. Over the past several years, the county has worked to carefully balance these agencies' often competing priorities and legal requirements. The RSA's resolution that was developed in coordination with HDD and Coastal Commission, which declared this property surplus, directed the county to pursue approximately 3 acres of affordable housing, 1 acre of open space, and the remaining acreage for visitors serving accommodations. To accomplish that, a lot line adjustment is required before the property can be sold. The county has spent years in good faith negotiations and discussions with the Port District, including 6 months under an exclusive negotiating agreement with the Port and a housing developer, CHW, attempting to reach agreement on a viable lot line adjustment and project approach. Despite those efforts, no financially or physically viable proposal was presented that can meet the county's affordable housing obligations while also supporting the Port's proposed low-density luxury RV park concept. The county does not agree with the Port's assertion that affordable housing and coastal priority uses are mutually exclusive on this site. Under the Coastal Commission staff recommendations before you today, approximately 5 acres would still remain available for future visitor serving, recreational, open space, and coastal access uses. We support approval of the staff's recommended modifications as written and respectfully urge the commission to avoid additional conditions or procedural requirements that could further delay the implementation of this project and jeopardize available funding.
Thank you. Next, we had three people from Community Housing Works, Stephen Swiasicki, Stephen Moreno, and Marisea Fuller. We are only able to see Steve Moreno on Zoom if you wish to give a comment.
Hi, I'm this is Steve Moreno. I'm a project manager with Community Housing Works. I'm actually here just available for questions. We are in support of the agenda item and do urge you to move it forward as presented. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And then we had two other speakers for this item, Thomas Weldon and Mike Guth. Thomas Weldon, I see that you're on a phone. You should be able to unmute now. You can unmute by dialing *6. There you go. I see that you're muted.
Hello. Can you hear me? I'm Thomas Weldon.
Yes, we can hear you.
Well, thank you, sir. I have a prepared statement. Well, I'll read. Jesus said in Matthew 26, verse 11, "The poor you will always have with you." Unfortunately, in this country, we have more and more working poor. Now, this land at 7th and Bromer has been for the working poor a place that they could have access to the ocean. And the way that they would have access to the ocean is often on Sundays, which is probably the busiest day in the at the harbor, they would be able to park their boat trailers and vehicles on 7th and Bromer. And this has taken place for the past at least 20 years, possibly even more. Now, I want you to picture yourself. You as a commissioner have worked 6 hard days, either in the fields or in some other endeavor. And you want to take you and your buddies, and you're a working poor person, which is, like I said, more and more of us are. and you want to take you and your buddies out to the ocean and go fishing. And I have fished a lot out in the ocean. And you go out, you have a wonderful day, and you actually get healed. You feel better. You come back and you're ready to work another 6 days. The ocean somehow has a healing effect on people. Now, I want you to imagine yourself in the future. Seventh and Brummer has been developed. It's pretty much housing and maybe a park, and you have a park. And so I want you to imagine that you don't have parking available because Seventh and Brummer has been developed in the housing. And there's no parking available, so you don't get access to the ocean. Now, we have in the future, the ocean is going to rise. So maybe 25 to 30 years from now.
Sir, please finish your thought.
Okay. The parking that you have in the harbor is no longer available because the ocean is driven. Right.
Thank you, sir.
And Seventh and Brummer will be.
Thank you. And then our only other speaker for this item is Mike Guth. We have your presentation. Go ahead.
Oh, very good. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. Mike Guth speaking for the Sierra Club. Let's see. Yet again, you've got an item in my neighborhood. Next slide, please. This small parcel, 7th and Brummer, well, not that small, 8 acres, I believe presents a microcosm of competing Coastal Act interests. Just heard Mr. Weldon speak about how it actually is part of the harbor's overflow parking plan that was required for their CDP through the city to do expansion in the harbor, which isn't mentioned in the staff report. So it's got visitor serving aspects going on right now. It's long been planned for visitor serving uses, but also we have a need for housing, and the Sierra Club supports 100% affordable housing projects. And I think the staff recommendation of 3.5 acres is the appropriate one, and the Sierra Club supports the staff recommendation. But there are competing interests here, surely. Next slide, please. Yeah, there we go. Just to give you the bigger picture, in circle is where we're talking about North Monterey Bay, and I highlight, you can see in the lower right where we were last month in Gonzales. Next slide, please. This is the Mid-County Coastal Plain. Pleasure Point in the foreground. The middle county area there is called Live Oak. There's the harbor. In the circle is the site. Next slide, please. You can see here that from this land in the circle, you can get to either side of the harbor and get to downcoast and upcoast beaches. It's a fantastic location, both for housing and for visitor serving areas. Next slide, please. And this shows how you can, you don't see the site in your lower left, but it shows where you're coming from. Next slide, please. In the original county planning, next slide, please. This area in the circle on the left, it's been in the crosshairs of both development and visitor serving for decades. We support the balance proposed, and there's a false narrative that the Coastal Commission doesn't support housing. You are turning over a housing lot here to ministerial permit approval from this point forward, and so that should belie the myth that the Coastal Commission doesn't support housing in the coastal zone. We support this. Thank you.
Thank you. No other speakers.
Great. Thank you very much. Before I turn to my colleagues, I'll go back to Mr. Teufels, or Director Hucklebridge, excuse me.
Yes, we want to respond to some of the comments. First, I'd like to go to Shanna Gray to talk about the North Coast tiny homes item. Shanna?
Thank you. Morning. With regard to item 14B, our commenter showed us the definition of tiny homes, and this definition for tiny homes was provided by the city as part of their overall ordinance related to tiny homes themselves and tiny home community development areas. Tiny homes don't necessarily need to be towable. Some can have a permanent chassis, others will have a temporary one. But when they are towable, they must be licensed. HCD really only has jurisdiction over tiny homes that are permanently affixed. In this case, under staff's review, we, based on how the tiny home communities were addressed in the zoning. There are, it's bifurcated. We really have two things that we're looking at. There's the tiny home communities and how all this ordinance applies to them. But there's also all of the other portions of the LCP that we believe cover any other type of permanent concept for a tiny home. So if there is a tiny home on a permanent foundation, it could be considered an ADU. And in those cases, it would be subject to all of the ADU standards. And so resulting, we do think that the way that it is presented here in this particular situation is appropriate. Based on the two different types of things that might be considered, the tiny homes versus ADUs that are actually also tiny homes. And so we think that everything is covered the way that it should be covered in this case. So we're available for additional questions as needed.
Thanks, Shanna. Now I'd like to go to Nolan to address the issues of the Santa Cruz County item. Nolan?
Yeah, thank you, Kate. Nolan Clark in the Commission Central Coast District Office. The parking issues at 7th and Bromer, just to respond to that briefly, SIT staff's understanding that the site is infrequently used for overflow parking. I would also just note that there are other overflow areas. And as explained in the staff report, only approximately 3.5 of the 10 acres of the site would be reserved for affordable housing development. So if it's the will of the community, once the other coastal priority site uses are developed, that parking be a part of that development plan to accommodate any overflow parking issues at the harbor, then that's certainly still feasible. The development of the housing at the site won't preclude that as an option. Thank you for the opportunity to respond.
And that concludes staff's comments.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. I will begin with Vice Chair Hart.
Thanks so much. You know, the discussion about the Fort Bragg tiny homes just reminded me of a situation I encountered when I was the regional parks director, and I just think it's something I want to note for LCPs. So the tiny homes, one of the initiatives that state parks had during the last 10 years or whatever, is to build small cabins for people to provide more access to the coast and to parks, because a lot of people don't have all the camping gear and everything they need. But the problem, at least that we encountered in the coastal zone in Sonoma County, is that they had to be on wheels, which is sort of, in the case of what we were building or wanted to build, was sort of an artificial, kind of the way the speaker talked about it. And I know that this is something that is apparently incorporated into LCPs, but I think it's worth focusing on going forward. I think generally speaking, it sounds like it's being addressed in the LCPs in terms of tiny homes versus ADUs versus whatever. But I think it's just something to take note of as we try to expand public access to the coast, to have local jurisdictions when we're considering LCPs not make that requirement. It sounds like a small thing, but it's actually not. You know, it's a big deal in terms of people being able to spend the night at the coast.
Commissioner Wilson.
Thanks. I wasn't going to talk on that, but it's definitely part of the definition. And as you know, we've had the definition of mobile home come to us often, and it means the ability to remove the structure within 24 hours, not how big it is, how tall it is, or other things like that. It's like, so those definitions are not just on us, but they also are in state statutes and other things, and so we just have to make sure we're aligning. My question has to do with the housing in Santa Cruz, and I'm 100% in favor of this project, but what we've seen in some places is deed restrictions on housing or other uses that may have use conflicts with maritime uses, in that sort of like right to farm provisions, basically meaning that if we're aligning residential development next to farming or maritime uses such as fishing and or these other things, there is a deed restriction that often is in the residential uses that basically means that they can't really complain about the smell of fish or those sorts of things. So that part of what, and having been on a harbor district, this is part of the fear of, or whatever the concern, is that you're trying to operate these longstanding uses for harbor uses, and then what could come in as conflicting complaints, I guess, and expectations that people have because it's residential, and then now that's what's impinging upon, now the harbor district has to, or the harbor users have to address that, which they didn't have to before. And so I didn't see it addressed in what we have in front of us today, and I was going to bring it up before it was on consent, but I just if I would put it out there that, and I'm in favor of moving forward with this, but I would encourage the district and the city to, if they can, figure out some language to deal with that that issue, and also flag it for future projects that come before us at the commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the report. I just want to make sure I'm clear with regard to the definitions. So it's my understanding from the report and staff's comments that notwithstanding what these definitions are with regard to mobility, non-mobility, the municipalities themselves, through zoning changes or their current definitions, can build those tiny homes that they want to build, notwithstanding my confusion, I guess, on the definition of tiny homes and their mobility chassis, et cetera.
Through the chair, if I can respond, I'll turn it over to Shanna, but my understanding is that's correct, and that it might be called a tiny home if it meets that definition, or maybe an ADU or some other, it might fit in another way into the LCP, but a structure, a smaller structure that's used for, you know, habitation, whether or not it's towable or not, you can still permit it. It just might be called something different. Shanna, did I get
yes,
that correct?
It's absolutely accommodated.
Yes. I think what she was saying is both of those types of, you know, different structures would be accommodated. They just might be called something different.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Lopez.
Yeah, I hate to belabor and extend the conversation. I just wanted to share context because I had a reason to have to dig into this issue about why, right, wheels are required. And it was back '70s, the state took back authority over anything on wheels, whether it was inland or coastal. And it was because many local jurisdictions were pushing out mobile home parks because of their condition and what they felt was a nuisance. So the state took that back. All mobile home parks at that point went under HCD, and anything on wheels afterwards were more easily permitted to the state. Why we ended up with two different definitions is a vestige of that. So just wanted to share that as context as we move forward in understanding why there's two different titles. That's the reason why.
Okay, thank you very much. Any further comments? A motion?
I'm happy to move items on that have been moved to consent.
Motion by Commissioner Wilson, a second by Commissioner Loewenberg. Any objections to unanimous consent? Seeing none, so approved. Thank you. Okay, now we will keep on. We're at item 7, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That brings us to item 7 and the Deputy Director report for the Energy, Ocean Resources, and Federal Consistency Division. We only have negative determination concurrences to report this month, so an additional vote to approve by the Commission is not required today. I do want to note, however, that we received correspondence from Nina Beattie raising concerns about the Scientific Research Buoy Project proposed by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and Scripps Institute of Oceanography. That's one of the items we're reporting on the negative determinations. Those concerns relate to the inclusion of an echo sounder on the buoy's monitoring array. While we are working with Ms. Beattie to better understand and address her concerns and provide her with additional information, I would note that this is a standard type of scientific research equipment, and it uses low energy and does not raise the same types of concerns that high energy seismic survey or sonar equipment does raise. So we continue to feel that it was appropriately evaluated and appropriately concurred with through the negative determination. That concludes my DDR, and I'm not aware of any speakers signed up to comment on this item.
Okay, thank you. Any ex partes? Any speakers?
Confirming no speakers.
Great. Okay, do three or more commissioners object to the deputy director's report? Seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. On to item 9, please. North Coast District's deputy director's report.
Thank you. Item 9 is the deputy director's report for the North Coast District, which includes 6 waivers, 1 immaterial amendment, and 1 permit extension. We do have one item of note in this month's report. We have received correspondence from Mendocino County and from the Albion River Bridge stewards regarding one of the waivers being reported to you today, specifically for the Caltrans Albion River Bridge geotechnical investigation in Mendocino County. In this case, Caltrans is proposing geotechnical drilling consisting of 9 borings within paved road surfaces and roadway shoulders, the purpose of which is to support evaluation of a potential future Albion River Bridge replacement project. The application was submitted to the commission as part of a consolidated permit process agreed upon by Caltrans, Mendocino County, and the commission. The Mendocino County correspondence indicated a preference for this item to be heard at a local hearing. However, it is not feasible in this case. While we recognize that a Mendocino County location would be ideal, there are no commission hearings scheduled in Mendocino County this year, and this is an active project that is subject to the Permit Streamlining Act. The correspondence from the Albion River Bridge stewards raises 9 issues in 2 separate comment letters and requests that the item be heard as a full CDP rather than a de minimis waiver. To more effectively address these issues, we responded in an addendum to each of the points, and this addendum has been posted to the tab for this agenda item, but I am going to summarize it for you. The commenters argue that the waiver is procedurally flawed, claiming it conflicts with the purpose of the consolidated CDP review and relies on disputed commission jurisdiction that has not been adequately analyzed. They also contend that the waiver, including mapping and technical details, They also contend that the waiver lacks complete and accurate project description, including mapping and technical details, and therefore cannot support a proper evaluation. Additional concerns include potential impacts on public access and recreation, as well as possible effects on ESHA, riparian habitat, wetlands, and nesting birds. Further objections assert that the waiver does not sufficiently address water quality protections and that no best management practices are provided. Commenters also argue that the project's location in a highly scenic area requires visual, historical, and cultural resources review, which they assert that the waiver does not include. They state that separating this investigation from the larger bridge replacement project improperly avoids evaluating cumulative impacts, and they conclude that the waiver lacks enforceable conditions needed to protect coastal resources. After reviewing all of these concerns, staff determined that the procedural and jurisdictional issues were correctly addressed, and that the other substantive contentions were already considered during the review and evaluation of the project application. In general, there seems to be a fundamental misunderstanding as to how staff reviews waived projects. Analysts receive the full application, including a complete project description, all relevant maps and plans, BMPs, and any other relevant materials. Then the projects are evaluated for consistency with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act, including their potential to adversely impact coastal resources. Only after this full analysis is completed can the ED make a determination that the development involves no potential for any adverse effect, either individually or cumulatively on coastal resources. Caltrans has submitted a full CDP application with attachments, including 4-hole location plans, drilling specifications, BMPs, and avoidance and minimization measures. These materials were properly reviewed by commission staff and do not change the staff recommendation that the proposed project qualifies for de minimis waiver. Staff continues to recommend that this item remain on the deputy director's report If four or more commissioners object to the Caltrans waiver, it will be pulled from today's agenda and brought back as a full CBP at a future hearing. As to any of the other items on the DD's report, staff is not aware of any opposition, and we are asking whether three or more commissioners object to any of those items. Staff are available for questions, and I would also note that there are a number of Caltrans staff available to answer specific questions related to the Albion Bridge geotechnical investigation. That concludes my presentation.
Great, thank you very much. Are there any ex partes? Okay, any public comments?
Yes, as Shanna mentioned, we have a group from Caltrans available for questions, and then we have two members of the public available to speak, Jim Hyde and Anna Marie Weibel. First up, Jim Hyde. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners, and thank you for pronouncing my last name correctly. My name is Jim Hyde. I'm the president of Albion Bridge Stewards. We're a 501c3 nonprofit whose mission is to advocate for the preservation of the last remaining timber trestle bridge on State Route 1, the historic landmark Albion River Bridge. As we state in our public comment letters, we respectfully ask that commissioners object to this de minimis waiver for the Caltrans proposed Albion River Bridge geotech investigation. This is not a no-impact investigation. Caltrans proposes 9 boreholes, some up to 150 feet deep, drill rigs, drilling fluids, mud tanks, waste drums, spill controls, lane closures, reversing traffic controls, and flaggers. The work would occur over several weeks in a sensitive coastal corridor that includes Highway 1, a designated highly scenic area, and wild and scenic river, and Asia-adjacent habitat. We're also really concerned about public process. Some critical application materials were not available until after we submitted our first comment letter last week. They may have been available at a commission office in Arcata, about 4 hours away, but they weren't distributed by email or postal mail to an interesting person's list. Those missing materials disclosed important details that aren't in the waiver notice, including possible weekend work, possible simultaneous drilling, guardrail removal, 55-gallon waste drums, and the fact that boring locations may even completely change. That information is essential to evaluating coastal resource impacts. 4 of those boreholes are proposed along an extremely narrow switchback road that provides RV and other large vehicle access to a campground and marina. It's hard to imagine how controlled traffic and boring rigs wouldn't restrict access to those important visitor-serving recreation areas. You know, in March, Mendocino County relinquished local permitting authority so that this could be processed as a consolidated CDP. The commission should not convert that process into a no CDP waiver. Please object to the waiver. It warrants regular CDP review with full public disclosure, Coastal Act and LCP allows, and enforceable conditions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hyde. Next up, we have Anne Marie Weibel. Ms. Weibel, please go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
I am a member of Albion Bridge Stewards, but I'm speaking as an individual. I hope that you will oppose the Caltrans de minimis waiver for this investigation. I assume you read the extensive correspondence and agree with the public that the public has a right to be properly and timely informed about such important issues with a project in the coastal zone, especially one that deals with a historic bridge that was placed in the California Register of Historical Resources and the National Register of Historic Places. Caltrans, when doing the geotechnical investigation on the west side of the bridge, left all
Emery,
the boards...
Emery, I'm yes. Sorry to interrupt you. This is Anthony from AGP Video. Is there some type of alarm going on in the background there that you can please turn off so we can hear you clearly?
Thank you. I was wanting to do that, but I felt I was going to lose my time. Thank you.
It's okay. I paused your time, so if you want to turn that alarm off and we'll get back to your...
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
So when Caltrans did their the geotechnical investigation on the west side of the current bridge. They left all the samples in the rain and wind for 3 weeks, never revegetated the staging area, did not replace the guardrails, and did not deal with invasive weeds. With the last geotechnical investigation, the native tribes were contacted. I don't believe that has happened in this case with a waiver. The biological reviews were contradictory and listed some threatened endangered animals and plants that do not live here, but that do live here. So for us to receive information, you know, that's not even on your webpage, less than 48 hours before this meeting, and having a waiver that is not acceptable. So please oppose this waiver and schedule the CDP application for a local commission meeting. And I thank you for all your work.
Thank you, Ms. Weibel. That's our last speaker, Madam Chair.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay. Well, I will return to the commission. Comment?
Thanks. I just wanted to quickly comment on the Crescent City item and just acknowledge how great this is to do a CETA market sales. I really was excited to see this moving forward, and just want to express my excitement about that. It's going to be great for Crescent City and hopefully bring more visitors to that amazing place, which was just listed as the last affordable housing area in California. I think you could get a house under 400 or was on the coast of California. Thanks, Annie. That's with regard to the Albion Bridge, I just want to express my appreciation to the public for their love of this beautiful bridge and this beautiful place, and express my confidence in Shanna and our staff and in Caltrans that they are going to take the care that's necessary to make sure that this job is done in a very cautious fashion. And of course, we're just talking about geotechnical studies at this time. Just want to appreciate our staff and all the effort that they put into this.
Commissioner Williams.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Hart. I mean, sorry, Chair Harmon. And Vice Chair Hart for the comments. So with regard to that, you know, I don't necessarily have anything to add. I think the staff comments speak for themselves. Do appreciate everyone and for all their work on this and the comments today from the public. And I think I'll just pass it back. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Do three or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Okay, seeing no objections, the commission concurs. Thank you. Now, item 11, please.
Great. Thank you, Chair Harmon. That will take us to the North Central Coast calendar. And in the DD's report this month, we're reporting one waiver and two immaterial amendments. We're not aware of any objections or controversy regarding these matters. And so the question is whether four or more commissioners object to the items in the report. And if not, then the commission will concur.
Great. Any ex partes? Any public comments, Galen?
No public comments, just a group available to answer questions.
Awesome. Okay. Any comments? Seeing none, do four or more commissioners object to any item in the Deputy Director's report? Okay. There's no objections. The commission concurs. Thank you, Mr. Khan.
All right. Moving on, next will be the Central Coast calendar and the DD's report. And in it, we're reporting five waivers. We did receive objections to two of the waivers, and so I'll run through those now. The first objections are to the City of Pismo Beach beach cleanup waiver, where we received comments from the Surfrider Foundation and a member of the public. We responded in an addendum posted Tuesday, but I'll also summarize here. Namely, Surfrider supports the city's beach cleaning plan, but asked for clarity on the equipment used and suggested biological monitoring to protect rack and invertebrates. Other comments raised concerns about visitor data, sand compaction, and impacts to public access. Staff acknowledges these concerns, but after working with the city and state parks, we find the program appropriately balanced, where mechanical cleaning is limited to only 1 to 2 times per month along the most heavily used, roughly 3,000 square linear feet of beach, and is limited to dry sand, including above the highest high tide line in the summer, to protect Grunion and to preserve wrack and habitat. The city will use Surfrider preferred sand sifting equipment and will provide before and after photos to ensure wrack is not being targeted for removal. With these measures in place, we believe that the proposal protects natural resources while simultaneously maintaining a clean and accessible beach at one of the Central Coast's most used and visited public recreational access beach destinations. And we continue to recommend approval of the CDP waiver. The second objections are to one of the single-family home projects in the Del Monte Beach area of the city of Monterey, raising concerns about basement excavation and sandy soils and the removal of a mature Monterey cypress on site. In response, we'd note the applicant obtained the proper geotechnical reports, which found that the near-surface and subsurface soil conditions are suitable for the construction of the proposed residence. And along with typical construction methods, there should not be any significant stability or safety concerns. And regarding the tree removal, as noted in the waiver notice, the tree is ornamental and not native to the Del Monte Beach area, although it is native to the Greater Monterey Peninsula down coast. The applicant prepared an arborist report from a qualified arborist who inspected the tree and found the tree's anchoring root system has been previously disturbed. Those roots have been reduced and therefore recommended its removal, where it will only be removed outside of nesting season and when active nests are not present. The city's local approval also requires replacement of the removed tree, and the arborist recommended a replacement with a Monterey cypress or a Catalina ironwood. So in sum, the project is a modestly sized replacement home in an infill residential neighborhood, and we believe that the issues raised by the commenters were appropriately addressed through the city's permitting process, and we continue to believe a CDP waiver is appropriate in this case for that project as well. Past that, we're not aware of any objections or controversy regarding the other matters in the DD's report, and so the question is whether 4 or more commissioners object to those items, and if not, then the commission will concur. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Any ex partes? Any public comments?
Yes, we have Mitch Silberstein in person, and then Cynthia Replegal on Zoom.
Good morning, commissioners. Mitch Silberstein, California Policy, Senior Coordinator for Surfrider Foundation. We submitted written comments about the waiver for Pismo Beach's 5-year mechanical beach cleaning program. Our Slo County chapter had some concerns. We raised 2 primary ones in the letter. First was the type of equipment that the city proposed wasn't binding. I want to note that I'm still kind of researching which type of equipment is best for this. There's sifters which pass debris through a screen, then they return the sand and any associated organisms to the beach. Initially, that suggested less ecological impact. The rakers, by contrast, they comb debris from the surface without the screening step, meaning less depth penetration, but also no mechanism to return organisms to the beach. So I don't really know which one is best, but, you know, they did, so the reason we care is because wrack and invertebrates form the base of the beach food web that shorebirds and surf fish rely on. This brings to our second concern that the 5-year program lacked a biological monitoring component to track these potential impacts on dry sand invertebrates and wrack habitat. We do appreciate staff's thorough response in the addendum. The city confirmed it intends to use the sifter. This is likely more effective in removing buried trash, so that's a good thing. We also tentatively agree that the program's limited frequency, 1 to 2 cleanings per month, confined only to high-use areas with already reduced habitat function, strikes a reasonable balance. The city committed to before and after photo documentation of beach rack areas. That's a modest but meaningful substitute for formal monitoring. My hope is that Surfrider Slo County volunteers keep an eye on operations independently, since the commission will rely on city-provided reporting. I'll close with this. Surfrider, our ultimate goal is a coast where cities and volunteers don't need to clean the beach in the first place because beachgoers leave it the way they found it. Programs like this are a practical necessity in the meantime, but we'd be rather working ourselves out of the need for this kind of job. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silverstein. Next up, via Zoom, we have Cynthia Replegal. Ms. Replegal, please go ahead. Ms. Replegal, oh, please go ahead.
Sorry, had a little trouble getting unmuted there. I'm Cynthia Replegal, a Pismo Beach resident. I moved to the Central Coast 10 years ago from Southern California and marveled at how little trash littered the sand. Pismo Beach isn't Santa Monica, which had 4.2 million annual visitors per its 2024 EIS. It's been doing mechanical raking since the 1950s with three daily tractors that remove 44 tons of trash after a single holiday weekend, per a 2018 Smithsonian article. Santa Monica sees tens of thousands of visitors on a busy summer day. Pismo Beach, a city of 8,000 people with less than 600 downtown public parking spaces, claims to see the same with no source and no scrutiny. Staff's footnote in the addendum compares this to Santa Cruz's beach cleaning program, but that program has been processed as a full CDP with public hearings and findings since 1995, and the Commission's 2025 staff report describes it as serving the most popular beach destination on the Central Coast, with an estimated 1 million visitors. That staff report notes more than 100 miles of Southern California shoreline are groomed, every one authorized under a full CDP, which means this commission has never approved a beach grooming program on a waiver. The addendum dismisses manual cleaning as having limited effectiveness, although it's how most beaches on the California coast are managed. It ignores the weekly beach cleanup promoted on the city's tourism website, and that actual trash load data from coastal cleanup days and the annual city-led cleanup the morning after July 4th was not submitted, and no alternatives analysis was conducted. Something I love about my city is running on the beach in the peaceful early morning. My background is a morning in June, before many tourists arrive. Other early rising locals and tourists also enjoy beach recreation then. This morning calm would be shattered by a noisy, smelly diesel tractor raking trash. Approving this waiver would be an unexplained departure from the commission's own established practice. I respectfully urge commissioners to require the city of Pismo Beach to proceed through the full CDP process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Replegal. We have two speakers that we're unable to find in the webinar, so if you hear your name, please go ahead and raise your hand. We have Lori Mazuka and Celia Antonia Zarate. Lori Mazuka and Celia Antonia Zarate. Seeing nothing, we do have Riley Gerbrandt available to answer questions, and that is it. Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Vice Chair. Director Hucklebridge. Yeah, I'd like to turn it over to our Central Coast staff to respond to some of the comments we heard.
Sure. Just real quickly on the beach cleaning program. We continue to think a waiver is appropriate here. We have authorized certain beach grooming programs via waiver in other communities. And I think the reason for that is we have a pretty good protocol on how to do these things. I think the first and foremost, we want to limit these type of more mechanical grooming and cleaning programs to the most heavily used urban beaches like the city of Santa Cruz and like the roughly, 3,000, less than a mile distance in the city of Pismo Beach, which is pretty heavily used. We think we've honed in on some pretty robust biological protections just to make sure that we're only dealing with the dry sand buffers against the dunes and the Pismo Creek Lagoon system. And again, frequency, we're only talking about 1 to 2 times per month, including to protect grunion and other sensitive or potentially sensitive species and habitats there. Try to balance the recreational usage with the habitat function of all urban beaches. With that, though, our staff ecologist is online here in case there are any specific questions. But otherwise, I think we'd maybe just leave it there and we're available for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, I'll return to the commission. Comments? Commissioner Nadoff.
Thank you for that further clarification from staff, because I think that the potential for disruption of habitat, I don't know if there's no, what happens if there's nesting birds there, if that's going to be monitored, I hope. But I really appreciate the public bringing this to our attention, and it sounds like it's going to be monitored closely, and if staff has worked through that. So I just wanted to express my, I share some of the concerns, but I appreciate the work that the staff's done.
Okay, great, thank you. So do three or more commissioners object to any item in the deputy director's report? Seeing no objection, the commission concurs. Thank you. Okay, item 13, please.
That brings us to item 13A. Claire Villegas in the Commission's Statewide Planning Unit and Dr. Rachel Pausch in the Ecology Unit will be giving the staff presentation from Zoom. Claire, please go ahead when you're ready.
Thanks, Erin. Good afternoon, Commissioners. Item 13A is a notice of impending development prepared by the Resource Conservation District of Santa Cruz County in collaboration with the University of California at Santa Cruz for forest health and wildfire resilience vegetation treatments. Next slide, please. As the Commission will recall from prior presentations, Coastal Act Section 30605 offers public works plans, or PWPs, as an alternative to project-by-project review. The Commission has certified five PWPs related to forest health and fire resilience, consistent with statewide goals to streamline these projects and the governor's initiative to cut the green tape. This Notice of Impending Development, or NOID, is being submitted under the Santa Cruz County RCD Forest Health and Fire Resilience PWP. The PWP area is shown in the hatched area on the slide. This PWP was certified by the Commission on July 8, 2021, and expires on July 7, 2031. The issue before the Commission today is whether the project described in the NOID is consistent with the certified PWP. Commission action is thus limited to imposing conditions to bring the project into conformity with the PWP standards. Next slide, please. The project area is located on UCSC's main residential campus, outlined in red on the map. While UCSC plans to treat almost 2,000 acres across the campus, only 274 acres are located within the coastal zone and the subject of this NOID. The coastal zone treatment areas are west of Empire Grade and identified on the map with arrows. A lack of disturbance over most of this area, such as natural fire, has resulted in denser forests, fuel accumulation, changes to wildlife habitats, and shifts in ecological succession pathways. The 2020 CZU Lightning Complex fire, which burned over 80,000 acres near the project area, underscored the need to reduce fuels and restore natural disturbance regimes. UCSC is thus proposing treatments to restore ecosystem processes, promote biodiversity, restore degraded habitats, and protect sensitive resources. Treatments are designed to address fuel accumulations and facilitate returning the landscape closer to natural historic conditions. Next slide, please. The project primarily involves ecological restoration treatments shown on the map in green, which make up about 98% of the treatments. Approximately 2% of the treatment types will be maintenance of existing fuel breaks and wildland urban fuel reduction shown on the map in purple and orange. Ecological restoration treatments could be implemented through a combination of manual and mechanical treatment, prescribed fire, limited herbicide application, and prescribed herbivory. Manual treatment and prescribed broadcast burning could be implemented across the project area, while mechanical treatment, pile burning, and prescribed herbivory could only occur across a maximum of about 217 acres. Herbicide application would be targeted to invasive species and would only occur on a maximum of 1 acre. Treatment can occur any time of the year, dependent on funding, as well as seasonal and timing restrictions. UCSC anticipates starting work under this NOID in 2027. I will now turn it over to the Commission's staff ecologist, Dr. Rachel Pausch, to provide additional context on the ecological conditions of the project area.
Thanks, Claire, and good morning, Commissioners. Next slide, please.
The project area contains a variety of ecosystems and vegetation communities shown on the Vegetation Alliance map here on the left. These include redwood forest, Douglas fir forest, and grasslands. There is no chaparral or coastal sage scrub in the project area within the coastal zone. The project area today is characterized by forests that are far denser than their historical pre-industrial condition, largely due to intense land uses and decades without beneficial fire. Many tree species, including oaks, madrone, Douglas fir, and pines, are now more vulnerable to disease, which increases tree mortality and adds to fuel accumulation. The pictures on the right demonstrate the encroachment of trees into grassland due to the lack of disturbance over time. This coastal prairie area has continued to decline as conifers and shrubs establish and dry plant material accumulates. Overall, the landscape shows clear signs of shifting vegetation types, lower species richness, and elevated susceptibility to high-severity wildfire. Next slide, please. The CalVTP includes an extensive list of standard project requirements, or SPRs, and mitigation measures. The project has been designed to protect coastal resources through implementation of 71 different SPRs and 17 mitigation measures. These include a suite of best management practices to protect biological resources, including protocol surveys for special status wildlife and plants prior to implementing proposed treatments, biological monitoring during all treatment activities, and buffers from identified resource areas, such as watercourses and special status plants and wildlife. Impacts to soil health will be minimized by retaining vegetation cover, limiting heavy equipment use, and keeping root systems intact to protect the soil structure. UCSC proposed a minor clarification to one SPR, which staff supports. This SPR broadly requires delineation of watercourse and lake protection zones, and UCSC has clarified that these zones will be flagged when they are within 300 feet of project activities. Staff found that the proposed changes to this SPR do not revise the SPR, but rather provide additional specificity on the implementation of the SPR. In the case that project implementation cannot treat the entire campus at once, the SPR would apply to the current treatment areas rather than the whole campus. This additional specificity does not raise any issues regarding consistency with the PWP. Otherwise, UCSC is proposing to follow the standards approved in the PWP to ensure that resource impacts are avoided and strictly minimized. As a staff ecologist covering this area, I have reviewed the proposed NOID and agree that, as conditioned, the project is consistent with the biological protection requirements of the certified PWP. And I'll pass it back to Claire.
Thanks, Rachel. Next slide, please. After publication of the staff report, staff received three letters of support and a letter from Sierra Club California, which requested modifications and recommended additional special conditions. I'll provide a brief overview of the responses we provided in the addendum released on Tuesday. First, Sierra Club requested the SPR related to watercourse and lake protection zones not be modified as we described. However, as mentioned, UCSC is only adding detail on how this SPR will be implemented, which is consistent with the CalVTP and the PWP. They also describe concerns about crown separation, vegetation retention, and potential type conversion, citing language from the PSA that speaks to the retention of 10% understory cover and 25 to 100 feet spacing between retained patches. To clarify, the language Sierra Club cites refers to the proposed general treatments for understory vegetation rather than for trees. The retention percentage would vary with the treatment type, with ecological restoration treatments in forested areas having increased retention, including additional smaller trees, up to a minimum of 25% of understory vegetation retention and 25 to 75 feet spacing between retained patches. As discussed earlier, lack of disturbance has resulted in high densities in forest areas across UCSC, and staff thus finds the project is appropriately conditioned. Sierra Club's concern regarding the retention of dead trees or snags for use by wildlife are addressed through existing standards that require a registered professional forester or qualified biologist to identify and mark snags during biological surveys and retain 5 to 8 snags per acre. Regarding bulldozer use, the project already includes strong restrictions for mechanical treatment that require the least invasive methods and prohibit heavy machinery in watercourse and lake protection zones, except on existing roads. Finally, regarding consistency with county riparian regulations, The proposed work is primarily ecological restoration, which is allowed under existing exemptions. The work also avoids most activities defined as development and includes protective measures that meet or exceed county standards. In conclusion, staff appreciates Sierra Club's review and thoughtful comments, but finds that UCSC and the RCD have proposed a project that complies with the CalBTP and its project requirements, promotes ecological restoration and forest health, and is fully consistent with the PWP and county policies as conditioned in the staff recommendations. Next slide, please. Before I close, we want to thank the RCD and UCSC for their partnership to improve wildfire resilience in Santa Cruz. Staff recommends that the commission approve the NOID as conditioned. The motions can be found on page 5 of the staff report. This concludes the staff presentation, and we're available for questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Are there any ex partes? Okay. Any public comments?
Yes, we have the applicant who'd like to speak with a group available for questions, and then we have one additional member of the public. So first up, we have Erica Carpenter. Ms. Carpenter, are you available? Please go ahead and unmute yourself and go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Erica Carpenter, and I'm a principal environmental planner with UC Santa Cruz. On behalf of UC Santa Cruz and the Resource Conservation District of Santa Cruz County, we appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Next slide, please. So just wanted to give you a brief background on the Wildfire Vegetation Management Plan and why it was initiated for the UC Santa Cruz Main Residential Campus. As discussed in the staff presentation, approximately 6 years ago, the CZU Lightning Complex fire really devastated the Santa Cruz Mountains. The figure on the left in this presentation shows the wildfire severity ratings at UC Santa Cruz, but also shows the footprint of the CZU Lightning Complex fire in the upper left of the figure. It came approximately a mile from the northern edge of our campus, and our entire campus community was evacuated during the fire. Really, the fire became a catalyst to addressing increasing wildfire frequency and severity in the Santa Cruz Mountains. During this time, UC Santa Cruz was also preparing a long-range development plan for the campus that would guide the development over the next 20 years. And the environmental impact report determined that the plan would increase the risk of wildfire on our campus. And so a mitigation measure was actually included in our environmental impact report that required preparation of the plan, as well as implementation of treatments on the UC Santa Cruz campus. Next slide, please. So approximately 2 years ago, we began preparing the plan. As discussed in the staff presentation, approximately 2 years ago, we began preparing the plan. A technical working group was established, which really included faculty and staff members at the university with relevant technical and resource expertise to advise on treatments. The university also conducted broad outreach with several open houses, both in person and virtually, to get input from our campus community as well as the broader Santa Cruz community. UC Santa Cruz would continue this outreach to the community as we begin treatments on our campus in the near future. During preparation of the plan and the PSA addendum, we also engaged with various resource agencies such as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And we appreciated the opportunity to also to engage with the coastal staff on this project as well. Next slide, please. So the objectives of the plan, which were discussed a little bit in the staff presentation before, are really to steward the natural resources on our campus in a manner that aligns with campus values of biodiversity, resiliency, sustainability, traditional ecological knowledge, unique campus integrity, and the overall academic mission of the university. The goals of the plan are also based on these objectives and include establish ecosystem and campus community resilience to wildfire while promoting biodiversity, restore degraded habitats, and protect sensitive resources, including valuable coastal ecosystems. Next slide, please. The staff presentation touched on this a little bit, but I just wanted to provide a couple more slides on some of the vegetation type transitions that are happening on our campus. These particular slides show some grasslands in our upper campus that have really transitioned over an 81-year period from 1941 to 2022. They were nearly contiguous in the 1940s and have since been reduced to three small pocket meadows due to woody encroachment of vegetation on these grasslands. And this has really resulted in a decline of ecosystem health due to a lack of disturbance on the land. Next slide, please. This next slide also shows some vegetation type transitions that are happening in the coastal zone on our campus. This picture shows the mortality of manzanita trees that have been overtopped by Douglas fir trees. These conditions really are not unique to UC Santa Cruz, but are very similar to other areas across the Santa Cruz Mountains. Next slide, please. This slide here shows this slide also just addresses vegetation type transitions. This figure illustrates kind of pre and post ecological restoration treatments proposed in the coastal zone. The image on the left is a forest which has been left undisturbed. The image on the right is a forest that has been treated to reduce fire risk, to be more resilient, and to enhance wildlife habitat. The density of the vegetation in the image on the right on the slide was developed in consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service based on similar vegetation treatment program projects and have been incorporated into the UC Santa Cruz Wildfire Vegetation Management Plan. Field reviews with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service have confirmed that the proposed snag and woody debris retention levels are appropriate for listed wildlife species and their habitats. Next slide, please. And finally, Rachel touched on this a little bit in her presentation, but there are a number of measures that are required in addition to the robust BTP, PSA addendum, and PWP environmental protection measures. The UC Santa Cruz would also be implementing mitigation measures from the university's long-range development plan environmental impact report by qualified professionals prior to and during treatments. And then next slide, please. And finally, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. And I and our team are available to answer any questions. Thank you so much.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. We have Mike Goof available via Zoom. Mr. Goof, just one sec. Mr. Goof, please go ahead.
Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Mike Goof again for Sierra Club, California. And next slide, please. I want to let you know that the Sierra Club supports the staff recommended modifications, and we have some comments. We put in significant comments. They're on page 7 of your correspondence file. And I wanted to mention that we find many laudable aspects to the plan. We just heard Ms. Carpenter and we heard Dr. Pausch talk. And often what happens in the plans highlight the good parts, and our concern is often what kind of discretion does the plan allow further? And we certainly appreciate Coastal staff's dialogue with us during this process. We put in extensive comments. The addendum came out. Responding to them, we don't accept all of it, but we very much appreciate the dialogue. And I'll say on this one, we're in the same room together talking. Next slide, please. We highlighted also these encroachment things. These are the kinds of treatments we very much support. We have experts in our Santa Cruz Conservation Committee, and they've been to these areas and they see these things. This is the kind of stuff we support. Ecological restoration, and then you get blurry lines between ecological restoration and fire management. Next slide, please. And the plan as it went through the RCD, in our view, tried to exempt itself from standard project requirements that your staff has now clawed back in special condition 8, which we very much support. This is 270 acres out of a 2,000 acre overall plan at 270 in the coastal zone. Like I said, we're generally supportive, but it raises an opportunity to discuss one more thing. Next slide, please. And that is a bias towards overthinning. Next slide, please. And overall, thinning, fire concerns overrule ecological restoration when we really should be protecting communities in another way. And if you look at this slide, this is why. Again, we appreciate the dialogue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Guth. There are no more speakers, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. With that, I will see if our staff wants to respond or just return to the commission.
I think I just want to appreciate Mr. Guth's comments. And I think to summarize at the heart, Mr. Guth disagrees about what level of vegetation management and what methods of removal are appropriate in our open spaces to ensure that sensitive wildlife and plant species and coastal resources are being protected. However, in this case, our staff ecologist, Dr. Pausch, reviewed the project treatment prescriptions and is comfortable that the level of proposed vegetation removal and the methods to implement this work will adequately protect sensitive species and resources while also reducing the risk of future catastrophic wildfire. So, as proposed with the conditions that staff is recommending in the staff report, we believe the project is consistent with the requirements of the PWP and will protect coastal resources in this area. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. I'll return to the commission. Vice Chair Hart.
Sorry, I'm commenting on everything. But on the, yeah, but on this particular one, I mean, I share the Sierra Club's concerns, although while acknowledging the amount of work and effort that went into this. And I was just, I just wanted to ask you, Erin, once we approve the plan and the trees are marked and the plan begins, do we ever have any, is there any review, further review, or this is the final sign-off?
For this project, this is the final sign-off. There are monitoring and reporting requirements in the special conditions, so we will get reporting back on the project.
Commissioner Escalante.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm happy to make the motion. I guess my only comment is this is now that we're dealing with more and more of these wildfire realities that affect so much of our landscapes. And, you know, obviously we need to be, our minds need to be a little more elastic as to, you know, how we approach all of these solutions and how we reassess how to deal with it. I know that, you know, up in my neck of the woods, there's been a lot of clear cutting somewhat sort of around the Smith River, somewhat around concerns from wildfires and cleaning up and the rush to do all of this. And it's really impacting sort of erosion and the roads and the highways. And, you know, now Caltrans is coming in, billions of dollars, you know, in infrastructure, and the way they're treating, you know, the wild lines, you know, maybe a couple miles up, you know, up the slope, that's going to have a dramatic impact. So I appreciate sort of your thoughtfulness and thoroughness thinking about this and keeping us abreast as to how we move forward with these approaches of handling our wildfire risks. Thank you. And I'm ready to make the motion. I move that the commission determine that the development described in the notice of impending development VTP-NOID-0001-26 as condition pursuant to staff recommendation is consistent with the certified Santa Cruz County Forest Health and Fire Resilience Public Works Plan, and I recommend a yes vote.
Second.
Okay, that's a motion by Commissioner Escalante, a second by Commissioner Wilson. Any objections to unanimous consent? All right, seeing none, the motion carries. And with that, I believe we are done for the day. So I want to thank staff for their hard work, the team at AGP, you guys are awesome, and the town of San Pedro for having us. We were very happy to be here and look forward to seeing you all next month in San Diego.